Tech Talk with Jess Kelly on News Talk.
Thanks to Harvey Norman. From setup and support to full repair, our Love Tech teams at Harvey Norman are here for the lifetime of your technology.
Hello and welcome to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, I'm in San Francisco for the launch of the new Samsung devices. I've been hands-on with the S10 and will tell you all you need to know about the foldable phone. I'll go for a spin in the Nissan Leaf to hear about the leaps they've made in terms of battery technology, and we'll hear about Zero Latency, the new facility aimed at virtual reality gamers. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or tweet with hashtag TechTalkNT. So it was a big week for Samsung here in San Francisco. As predicted, they unveiled three new devices in the S range. We have the S10, the S10 Plus, and the S10e. But the one that got the crowd most excited was the Samsung Galaxy Fold. The Unpacked event kicked off on Wednesday with a little video. And once that came to an end, Justin Dennison of Samsung took to the stage to confirm that the company's foldable phone had finally arrived.
The Galaxy Fold is a device unlike any that's come before it. At Samsung, we're driven to invent meaningful breakthroughs. And these days, we essentially live on our phones, right? Our screens are the windows to our worlds. But despite all the progress we've made, the size of our screens is still fundamentally limited by the size of our devices. Until now. With the Galaxy Fold, we're creating a new dimension for your phone and your life. We're giving you a device that doesn't just define a new category, it defies category. With the Galaxy Fold, you get a powerful smartphone and a revolutionary tablet, all in a single premium package. When it's folded, it has a 4.6-inch display. It's compact and perfectly portable. But when the device opens up, your world does too. With a massive 7.3-inch Infinity Flex display that transforms the Fold into a tablet. Now, in order to create a brand new type of smartphone, we had to develop brand new ways to design, engineer, and manufacture it. From the screen to the frame to every element you can see and touch, we left no stone unturned. One of the biggest challenges was building the backbone of the device, something that could hold strong, even after hundreds of thousands of folds and unfolds. So we invented a sophisticated hinge system that allows you to open and close the Galaxy Fold smoothly and naturally. And the beauty of it is, you don't even see it. The hinge's multiple interlocking gears are hidden, giving the device a seamless, elegant look. The Galaxy Fold is a one-of-a-kind luxury device, and there are limitless ways you use it. With two different screens, it's perfect for any situation. When closed, it fits right in the palm of your hand, so you can send a message to a friend or make a call with one hand while you're on the go. Of course, sometimes you want a larger screen. And the Galaxy Fold's Infinity Flex display gives you a powerful multimedia experience. With immersive visuals and sound by AKG, your favorite movies come to life in vivid color and rich audio. And the interior screen is so large that it powers a truly next-generation experience, one never before seen on a smartphone. 3-app multitasking. Each screen works perfectly on its own, but the Fold is more than two separate screens. It's a unified device.
Now, unfortunately, the Fold wasn't available for us to test out after the event. We've been told that it's unlikely we'll get hands-on time with it before April, but I have to say I am very excited about this one. So the way it works is you have a 4.6-inch screen, standard enough looking phone, a little bit chunkier than a normal phone, but only slightly. And then when you want a tablet sized device, you just unfold it and you have a 7.3-inch screen to play around with. It looks beautiful. The Fold really did dominate the event, but the S10 itself is a beautiful phone. They've made huge improvements to the camera, to the battery, and to the performance. There is one waiting on my desk in Dublin for review, so I will share on more details and further thoughts once I've had time to play around with it a little bit more. But the key thing that you need to know for now is there are three new S10 devices coming your way. There's the S10e, which is the more affordable device starting at 769. There are some compromises in terms of the bells and whistles on this phone, but if you want a premium device without the €1,000 price tag, that is the way to go. Then you have the S10, prices for that start from 919, and then the S10 Plus starts at €1,019. They're all in store from March 8th, and as I say, I will have my first impressions for you on Tuesday's Pat Kenny Show, and then a full review thereafter. So all in all, it was quite an exciting week. And talking of exciting things, a new facility has opened in Dublin that gives virtual reality gamers space to roam and complete their VR missions. I caught up with Ronan Cunningham, Managing Director of Zero Latency Dublin, to find out more.
Zero Latency is the first arena-scale virtual reality company in Ireland. What that means is you can now play virtual reality in a free roam environment, which means you're totally untethered by wires, free to walk through a 200 square meter room, shooting zombies, battling robots in aerospace, that sort of thing.
This sounds like the dream. So I've talked on this programme before to John Riley, who is a big fan of virtual reality, and he's a big gamer as well. And so he could say, you know, you put on a headset in your apartment or in your home, and you can be whatever you want to be, up until you walk into the coffee table or into the couch. You are so limited. Yeah. So explain to me how exactly it works, and what do I do? Like, is there equipment? What am I wearing?
Yeah, so you're gonna come into a reception area. You're going to register as a game player. You'll be taken through to what's called a briefing room, where you put the equipment on. You watch a short presentation on the games you're going to be playing. A little bit of rules, a little bit of house rules and health and safety and that sort of thing. And then you're taken through to the games arena itself. You're wearing a backpack, which carries the PC, which drives the game. And you've also got a headset, earphones and a gun. And that's where all the magic happens.
And is the PC heavy? Because I remember, and this is going to be a pathetic little insert, but I'm going to do it anyway. I remember when I was about 9 or 10, Quasar became a popular thing. Yeah. But I was only a little wimp, and I found the little vest very heavy. Mm. So are the PCs on the back, is it something that anyone can wear, or do you have to be a certain age or a certain strength?
We have an age restriction of about 10 years of age.
Okay.
Now, the main reason we do is for two reasons. The backpack does get heavy. Mm-hmm. The gun itself is actually weighted quite well as well. And it's a pump action shotgun. So, you know, it does take a lot out of you. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the main reason why we have an age restriction. But also some of the content in the games is, you know, probably warrants a restriction of about 10 years of age.
Okay. Yeah. So you go in and you've got your kit on, you've your VR headset on. Are you playing against other people? Is it kind of like the Quasar in that you are playing against other people? Can a group of 10 people go in and play, or can you just go on your own and be in your own little world?
So it's a multiplayer game, which again is where Zero Latency really stands out. So you and up to eight people can play within the game space at any given time. The current games titles that we have at the moment all lend themselves towards team games. So mm-hmm. so you and your seven mates are all part of the same team. You're battling zombies, you know, in a zombie infested city, or you're battling rogue drones, rogue robots in outer space, and you're all battling to try and save the earth.
So it's a new form of team bonding.
Exactly.
It's not all, you know, football and wall climbing. You can kill some zombies if you want.
Exactly,
as well.
Yeah, and everyone wants to shoot a zombie.
Where did this idea come from? Because I've heard of this type of thing before, but never in Ireland. So how did it catch your eye, and, you know, why are you involved?
Well, I suppose best place to start is in Australia. That's where Zero Latency was born, when some genius decided to mash together an Oculus Rift and motion tracking technology. And since then, it's grown to 25 arenas worldwide. We're going to be the 26th arena in Dublin. I came across it when I was on honeymoon in Tokyo, in Japan. Just caught my eye, and I said, I've got to try this. It would have been the first time I'd try free roam virtual reality. So went in, had one of those what have I just done moments, and I said, I got to bring this to Dublin.
And when you're doing it, is it, you know, again, when I was using the PSVR, and I talk about this all the time, I was suddenly Batman in my apartment and I thought I was deadly. But after about 20 minutes, you either catch yourself and you feel a bit silly, or you could feel a bit nauseous and so on. Now, some people will say that's down to the quality of the VR headset that you're wearing. But do people go for it in the zero latency, or is that self-conscious thing of, oh, do I look a dope?
No, I mean, you're in a large, dark room and nobody's really watching what you're doing because, you know, everyone else has a headset on too. Mm. The only person that can really see what you're doing is what we call the games master, who runs the games and the activities themselves. So, I don't think anyone really looks funny in virtual reality because, you know, at the end of the day, you're the only one who can see what's happening. And it's about being fully immersed in what you're doing. That's really where virtual reality excels. So to break that immersion breaks the experience for me.
And so from a business point of view, obviously you have the space, it's in Sandyford, and you have the units. You mentioned 8 people can be on a team. Can you have multiple teams in the arena at the one space, or what's the capacity? What way does that work?
Yeah, so the capacity is actually only 8 players at any time. So we run off 8 players per 30 minutes. So it's 30-minute gameplay, which is 16 players per hour. But, you know, there's no problem if a few groups of, if a larger group wants to show up. We generally break them down into smaller groups of 8. And then, you know, you can introduce a bit of competitiveness by saying, right, group 1, group 2, group 3, and they're all aiming for the highest score. So, you know, it really does, the whole game itself, the whole games themselves are gamified really well. So it really adds that whole social experience that people are looking for today.
Yeah, because some people may well wonder and may have thought, you know, is virtual reality, is it a very isolated thing? Again, back to the consumer side, when you're at home and you're Batman in your apartment on your own, it's not like when you're playing FIFA and everyone can watch and cheer and make fun of you. It's just you in there. So this is a way to make it a more social experience.
Yeah, exactly. And it is probably the most social thing you can do right now. And I think that this current generation, everything that they go out to do, I think it has to be social. Mm-hmm. It has to be competitive. It has to be gamified. And that's where zero latency really has hit the nail on the head. You know, you can be Batman in your home, but I don't think it beats, you know, being a team of 8 battling zombies in a zombie
Invested
land. Yeah,
so. It sounds like great crack. And so how much does it cost? And as I said, can smaller groups come along, you know, if 2 or 3 want to pop along, or does it have to be the group of 8?
We can take, even if just one person wants to show up and play, that means they've got the entire game space themselves and they can knock themselves out. We are charging €39 per person. It's a minimum kind of hour-long experience between briefing, gameplay itself, and then the debrief afterwards where you get your results and your scores. It's premiumly priced because it's a premium product, and it is one of those experiences that, you know, you will have to try at least once.
Yeah, and you don't really want to go and do a VR experience. Do you remember when VR became almost mainstream, on the cusp of being mainstream, and everyone went, oh, I tried VR, what did you do? Oh, I sat in a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And it just made you want to vomit. It wasn't actually a proper experience where you're immersed.
Yeah, look, I mean, VR has had some real false dawns, has to be said. I just think the last 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years, there's just been a quantum leap in the technology surrounding virtual reality. And one of the main things that they've eradicated is the sickness that's been associated with virtual reality down through the years. I guess the word, the name zero latency itself, you know, kind of touches on that, where, you know, they claim to be one of the first companies to eradicate motion sickness from VR. And right now they're running on less than 1% of their customers worldwide have had to complain about motion sickness. So I think that's really good results. So long may that last.
Awesome. And are you going to continuously, you know, look at the titles that you're hosting and add more titles to it? Because obviously the shooting zombies are good fun, but there are so many great titles out there that you could you know, potentially see coming down the world and coming into the world of virtual reality?
Yeah, I guess by bringing the franchise to Ireland, we're also buying into the roadmap that Zero Latency have created as a company. And that basically what they've promised is to release up to two new titles every year, which is great. You know, it's great to start with Zombies and Aliens. You know, but they've just released in Australia their first player v player game, where you can now play 1v1, 2v2, 3v3, or 4v4, and that really just ups the ante again another level.
If you want to find out more information, where can they get it?
They can go to our website, which is www.zerolatencyvr.ie, or they can check all the usual social channels at Zero Latency Dublin.
Awesome! Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Jess.
Coming up next, we go for a spin in the Nissan Leaf.
Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk, Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. On Thursday, February 28th, myself and our show sponsor, Harvey Norman, are hosting an event in their flagship store in Tallaght aimed at the parents of children between 7 and 16 years of age. It's totally free and is going to explore different aspects of parenting in the digital age. We'll have a conversation, plus provide some tips and tricks that will hopefully help. If you want to come along, register for your free place now on harveynorman.ie/events, and I will hopefully see you there on the 28th. Now, as the incentives to go green stock up, I went for a spin in the Nissan Leaf to learn more about the tech on board the electric vehicle.
Hi. Hi, Jess.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I believe you don't drive.
I don't drive. I know, it's embarrassing.
This is the perfect car for you. I would have you driving this in 10 minutes.
Let's go.
They are so simple to drive.
Really? See, so really? I know how to drive, I just don't have my license. Shall we go for a spin around the block?
Sure, yeah. So as you can see, we're powered up. Mm-hmm. You can't hear anything. All you can hear there is the parking sensors as we move away. It's complete silence. And I have your heated seat on for you as well.
Yeah, it's very comfortable.
I have my heated steering wheel on as well, so nice and warm.
You love yourself.
And I can do that all from my phone.
Oh, so is this the car that you can do that from your phone before you leave the house? So
when I get up in the morning, I look out, have a look at the weather, I just turn my car on, heat my steering wheel, heat my seat, and set the temperature. And that's it. I come out 10 minutes later, car's fully defrosted, and off I go.
And you know the way this is an EV, does that drain the battery then, or how does that work?
No, it doesn't. The car would be plugged in at home. So your heated seats and your heated steering wheel use power from a 12 volt battery, not from the main battery. So it doesn't affect your range at all. This is a Nissan Leaf. It's a 40 kilowatt battery. And this is an SVE version that we're in at the moment. What makes it different from a standard car is it has no gearbox, has no engine. It just has an electric motor and a battery. So there's even maintenance on these cars is minimal because you don't have your oil filters, air filters, gearboxes, clutches, DPFs.
So and all less things that can go wrong, basically.
All there's very few moving parts in an electric vehicle.
You mentioned there about the size of the battery and how powerful it is and so on. Give me some examples, like what kind of range will that do? How much will that cover? Is this just the shopping vehicle, or will it get me where I need to go and beyond?
If you take a look, this is winter, okay? And range does go down a little in winter. If you look at my clock here now at the moment, I'm on 98% and I have 272 kilometers left. So it's not a city car. I mean, I've traveled the country. I've traveled to Letterkenny, I've traveled to Limerick, Galway, Sligo, down to Cork, Kerry.
What I can see is that the sort of the console in the middle, in the dashboard between us, it has the map of where we are. So we've just left the News Talk office and we're driving through town now. But there's these little blue dots that'll tell you where there are charging points.
That's showing us all the charge points that there are in the locality. But if we go into the menu here, select charging station, and it'll show us all the charging stations around the country. So we can actually plan our journey. We can see that there's one 3.4 kilometers away, 3.4, 4.8, 5.6, 6.8. It will show us all the charge points.
Cool. And, you know, aside from, you know, the charging aspect, are there other benefits? Like, what are the... Because I'm quite a mathematically minded person. And when I'm buying on thing, I try and do the math. So if I'm buying a fancy bag, I think, well, if I take that out with me X amount of time, sure, it's basically paid for itself. How does that work in terms of an electric vehicle? You know, how long before you get an ROI, and do you actually save money, or is that another sort of electric vehicle myth?
Oh no, your running costs are minimal. If you look at the cost of running the car for someone like myself, I charge at home on a night rate electricity. Mm-hmm. So I paid 9 cents per kilowatt hour. Okay, so for me to drive 20,000 kilometers a year, it'll cost me 1.3 cents per kilometer, which is roughly about €250 for a year's driving. Wow. 20,000 kilometers. So if you look at that versus the cost of a petrol or diesel, which runs into 1,000, 2,000 mm-hmm. euro, there's big savings. There's savings as well on your motor tax. There's also the savings for the likes of myself, BIK. I don't pay any BIK now.
Explain to me what exactly the BIK is.
So benefit in kind is a tax that we pay for driving a company vehicle.
Okay.
And for me, it would be roughly around 300, 350 euro per year, mm-hmm. or sorry, per month. Oh. So it works out about 4,000 euro a year for most people who drive a company car. And in an electric vehicle, you don't pay any at all. So there's my son's college fees paid for now for the next...
That's nice.
3-4 years.
And you mentioned there that you have the charging station at home.
I have.
Like, is that a necessity for everyone, or is that just an added bonus that if you have
no,
this space, because obviously some of us live in apartments and so on.
I wouldn't say a necessity, but the real convenience of an electric vehicle is you charge it up while you sleep. So
okay.
You go home, you plug in the evening. I get up, and as you can see, at 97% now, I've still 272 kilometers. Mm-hmm. So I get up to a fully charged car that I can use for the day then.
Okay.
And sometimes for a week. If I'm just going in and out of the office, the charge would last me for a week.
And is it expensive to get the, and is it disruptive to get the charging point?
No, it's there's a grant from the SEAI of €600 towards a home charging kit, and they work out roughly in and around €1,000. So the cost to the, sorry, just get out here. The cost to the purchaser is roughly around €400.
Which is nothing really in the grand scheme.
Not at all.
And so why do you think there is still, because I a lot of the companies will say, oh no, there's no fear around EVs anymore. But I meet people all the time who say, I love the idea of one.
They haven't driven one. And that's all we need to do. I've done presentations all over the country, and there are people that are on the cusp of buying. They come in, they love all the incentives, they love the idea of driving an electric vehicle.
Yeah.
But there's that nervousness about it. Uh-huh. All you have to do is, like yourself today, get them into the car, get them driving the car.
And so, like, honestly now, obviously we know that you are associated with Nissan, but from a blind point of view, is there any real drawback from having an EV? Like, is there anything that you're like, maybe don't do it if you are X, Y, or Z type of person?
I would say somebody that's living in an apartment complex that cannot get the home charging, that can be a bit of a drawback, because you're reliant then on public infrastructure to charge.
Yeah.
And but other than that, not at all. I mean, I use it. It's my main car.
And you mentioned there about the infrastructure around the country. Like, there is a good network, and as you've pulled up on the map here, there are chargers, and they're kind of popping up everywhere all the time. Is the infrastructure good enough so that if we decide now to not just drive around Dublin but to head to Clare, I mean, would we make it to Clare? Is there enough charger points across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. There's what's called fast charging points, mm-hmm. that will charge the car up from 20% to 80% in... It normally takes me between 30 to 40 minutes. So normally what I would do is I would pull in, have a coffee, do some emails on my phone, and then come out and the car is fully charged again, ready to go. Really, it's down to how you drive the car, the range. I've driven to Letterkenny 244 kilometres without charging the car. And I've also driven 250 kilometres where I've had to charge the car because I've been heavy on the right pedal.
Okay. And you showed me a little button when we got in here now, the e-pedal.
I'm going to show it to you now. So if you look at e-pedal there now, mm-hmm. just brake and come to the lights. So I've selected e-pedal. It comes up on my dash here, as you can see. It's showing me e-pedal. Mm-hmm. And this is the one pedal driving system. So this is, we can drive around the city now for the day. And I will only use one pedal to drive. So I accelerate with the accelerator. And as I ease off, the car will brake. It'll regenerate power and put it back into the battery.
cool. So how exactly does that work?
I'll show you now. So as we accelerate off, we just use the accelerator. A normal car has three pedals, accelerator, brake and clutch. An automatic has an accelerator and a brake just. And this is, it's possible to drive this on just one pedal. So as you can see now, I'm accelerating away. Mm-hmm. As we're coming up towards traffic, if I ease off the accelerator, you'll feel the car. Do you see it slow
up? Yeah, it just pulls back.
Yeah, and this gauge here will show us how much power we're taking out. Mm-hmm. And it also shows us how much power we're putting back into the battery.
That's very clever.
So this is a system that taxi drivers really, really like. As you can see, we're up to a red light now. I haven't touched the brake. The car's come to a halt and it will actually hold itself as well. Plus it has armed the brake lights. But taxi drivers around Dublin City in summer have got up to 300 kilometres on a single charge just driving on e-pedal.
Wow. And so aside from the battery technology, like I'm looking at the dashboard and I'm looking at all the different bits and pieces here now, it's a well kitted out car, because I had a notion in my head that an EV would just be bare bones because they don't want anything using anything from the battery. They just want to get from A to B. But this is a well kitted out car.
Oh, this car is. It's a very high spec car. Like, there is no compromise. People think there's a compromise driving an electric vehicle. There's not. For most people, it's an upgrade to get into one. The only thing that uses power from the main battery is your electric motor and your aircon. Okay. That's all. Everything else is using power from a 12 volt battery, so it doesn't affect your range at all. So I've got, as I said, I've got your nice heated seat on there, my heated steering wheel, and that's not drawing on the power from the main battery at all. And the lights, the dash, the wipers, the whole lot, they don't affect your range at all.
And again, I see a USB port there that you could probably charge your phone or whatever like that.
USB port, charge your phone. It has Apple CarPlay, Android AutoPlay, so I can plug my phone in. It will read my text messages to me, ask me do I want to reply to them, and I can reply to them. It'll mirror image whatever is on the screen of your phone.
And are you seeing more and more people coming in asking questions and, you know, considering the electric vehicles? Because, you know, when you read the stats and the numbers and so on, they don't seem to be reflective of the conversations that I hear of people really, really, you know, wanting to learn more about the electric vehicles that are on offer.
There's huge interest in them at the moment. If you talk to any of the dealers around the country, they'll tell you where they would have had stragglers wandering in once a week, once a month, a couple of years ago. There's people in the showroom every single day now in to look at an electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. And consider it.
And we heard the sound of the sensors and so on going off a few times when cars are getting too close or when people are getting too close. Talk to me a little bit about that technology.
The Leaf itself has a 5-star NCAP rating. It was one of the first cars to be tested under the new regime, and it excelled in all aspects of it. It's got a standard, it's got forward emergency braking. So if we're driving along now and the car in front brakes and I'm distracted talking to you, the car will warn me and it will brake if I don't respond. It's also got what's called rear cross traffic alert. So if we were parked between two vans and we reversed out, mm-hmm. it will actually warn us of oncoming traffic. It's got lane warning intervention, and this is standard on all variants of the Leaf. So if I press a button there, if I cross the white line at all, not only will it warn me, but it will actually pull me back into lane. And then this one has ProPilot and ProPilot Park. So it'll actually drive itself once I keep my hands on the wheel. It will steer for us now in traffic. It'll stay in lane. And if we pull up to a parking spot, it will reverse park, forward park, or parallel park for us. And when I say park for us, I mean hands off the steering wheel. If you want to do it, hands off the steering wheel and feet off the pedals. And the car just does it itself.
That's the dream. Because that's the bit that I struggled with when I did my driving lessons. That's the thing I struggled with most, was the reverse parking. And again, I'm so impressed that this all comes on an electric vehicle. Like, the technology has come up so fast. The battery technology in these cars seems to have kind of come up.
Well, the battery technology, a 40 kilowatt battery giving you 250 to 270 kilometers range, is more than enough for 95-96% of the Irish population.
So you're grand. How much is the Leaf and what are the different variants of it? Like, can you go for a standard version, a bells and whistles version, and then sort of the fanciest pants one?
Okay, well, this is the fancy pants one. Mm-hmm. As you call it. The basic Leaf, which is the SV, is roughly around €30,000, and that comes with the forward emergency braking, with the different technologies that I was talking to you about, and it also comes with the navigation system. Then there's an SV Premium, which comes with an around view monitor. I'll show you that now in a few minutes. Front and rear park sensors. It's got auto dimming rear view mirror. And then this one, which is the bells and whistles, has a Bose stereo system, leather upholstery, heated seats back and front, heated steering wheel, ProPilot Park.
And how much is this one?
This one's about 35.
Oh, okay. But it's, again, it's still...
It's a lot of car for it, for the money. A lot of car.
And so when people come in and they're asking questions, is there a particular type of person that's coming in asking about it, or is it all kinds of everyone now?
A couple of years ago, it was a specific type of person that was coming in to look at an EV. Now it's people are getting out of every type of car. They're getting out of petrol, diesel, large SUVs. It's general public now that are coming in to look at the car. If you look around Europe, the Nissan Leaf is the best-selling electric vehicle in the world. Mm-hmm. They sold 300,000 units since its launch in 2010 of the old version.
Yeah.
80,000 in Europe over 8 years. And last year alone, we sold and had orders for 45,000 Leaf. So over half what we'd sold in 8 years, we sold last year alone.
That's incredible.
But as you can see, sitting in them, driving them is, it's a doddle.
Yeah, no, it's just like a normal car. And it, you know, when it comes to the charging and all the rest, I assume it's an easy enough process to hook up the charger.
Yeah,
and
I can show you, we've our ESB card here.
Yeah.
So we pull up to a charge point,
mm-hmm.
present our card, that releases the charge cable. Or for on-street charging, it'll open the flap to allow us to plug into it. You plug into the front of your car and that's it, it's done.
Oh.
You come back to your car, you present your card again. Once you present the card, it releases the cable and off you go.
That's very standard. And have you found yourself when you are driving around the country, you know, that maybe one of the charger ports, you know, is out of service? Because this is something that Geraldine Herbert told us about on the programme last year, that, you know, the infrastructure that's there is great, but it's only good if somebody's already not using it or if it's fully working, because there has been instances where someone plans their journey, gets to a charging point, and then it's out of service.
Well, I have an app on my phone which will show me if a charge point is free, if there's somebody at it, or if it's broken.
Oh,
and there
is,
the app. It's an ESB app. I'll show it to you when we go back on my phone. And I can actually demonstrate it to you. I'll show you some charge stations around. So if I was traveling up from Cork, I've enough options coming up from Cork.
Great, okay.
There's four or five fast charge points along the way that I can stop off at and charge. I suppose one of the issues with charging is the public infrastructure is it's free.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's free, it's like anything that's free, it's abused. People will pull up, they will charge at it, even though they have a home charger at home, rather than going home and charging and paying their couple of euro. But there is, ESB are going to introduce a charging structure now shortly, which should put a stop to that. And it just means that when the likes of myself that's traveling pulls up to a charge point, there won't be people there sitting there charging just for the sake of it and just because it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And there is plans as well, ESB, they have the funding now in place to put in more rapid chargers, and what they've done is they've identified strategic locations around the country for people that are traveling, that you will be able to pull in, charge up and continue on your journey. But look, as we looked at earlier with this car, with 270 kilometers of range, the only time you should ever use public infrastructure really is traveling.
Yeah.
And that's on long journeys. So for the likes of myself, I very, very seldom use public infrastructure. Very seldom.
It's very spacious in here now as well. Like,
yeah.
I've got space. It's nice.
Very roomy and very comfortable. Is your seat too warm for you now, or?
No. Listen, I'm happy out. It's very cozy. You're gonna have to push me out now when we're done.
So if we have a look there, just energy usage, this is showing us what's taking power out of the battery. So there's our motor. Mm-hmm. Our climate control is turned off. And as you can see, there's all our auxiliaries there, which is only taking 0.1 kilowatt hours out of the battery at the moment. Very, very little.
I do think that, you know, as I said, I hear so many conversations about electric vehicles. I do think that there was such a fear factor for such a long time, but it's definitely changed in the last little while, hasn't it? Like, there used to be such talk about range anxiety and so on.
And it's the first question people ask when they walk into a showroom. Yeah. And I mean, if you had 100 people come through the door tomorrow, 100 people will ask you, what's the range? What's the range? And I would always ask them, what's your needs? What do you need the car to do for you? What do you need? How many times, you know, what? How many kilometers do you do a day? And then I work out how many times a week they'd have to charge. So somebody that's doing 40 kilometers a day will charge once a week. Somebody who's doing 80 might charge twice, three times a week. But again, the whole convenience of the electric vehicle is you charge while you sleep.
Yeah.
Pull in, plug it in, put the timer on to command for your night rate electricity, charge it on a night rate, and then get up the next morning to a nice warm preheated car that's fully charged.
I think some people have that fear factor of it being like an iPhone from a few years ago where you have to charge it 10 times a day just to get from A to B.
Well, like I said, with 270 kilometers of range, there's very, very few people would charge his car more than once or twice a day, even doing long journeys.
Well, that's good to know.
And the battery has an 8-year warranty on it. There's an 8-year warranty against 25% degradation. So if the battery degrades by more than 25% over 8 years or less than 160,000 kilometers, Nissan will replace the battery. So there's that peace of mind there.
That is really good. And so, like, what is the lifespan? Like you mentioned there about the battery, but if you are getting an EV, should you be upgrading your car as much as you would or less frequently than you would if it was a normal car?
It's the very same as a normal car. People will upgrade as new models come out. Mm-hmm. And there's some people who'll use it to keep the car for its lifetime for 10, 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And a really cool feature as well with the Leaf is it's the first electric vehicle that has vehicle-to-grid and vehicle-to-home technology. So as well as accepting power, I mean, this, apart from being a car, it's also an electric storage device. So if you had the right infrastructure at home in your house, you can charge the car with solar, and you can also power your house from the car. So if your electricity went out at home, you can plug your Leaf in and supply power back to your home. And as you'll hear now, as we begin to move off, you're going to hear a whistle in the car. Mm-hmm. That's VSP, it's vehicle sound for pedestrians. And it's just a digital sound that it's in the car up to 30 kilometers an hour and then cuts out, and it cuts back in at 25 kilometers an hour. You can hear it there now at the moment. And that's just to make people aware that there is something in the vicinity moving around them.
Because it is so quiet.
It is very, very quiet. Now we'll just pull around to that charge point, and I'm going to demonstrate the ProPilot Park to you.
Cool.
Okay, so if I pull up here, I'm looking for my parking space. Mm-hmm. So I just press the button here. Okay. It's identified the spot there. Reverse in. So I just press start. Press that button. Take my feet off the pedals, hands off the steering wheel, and sit back. Mm-hmm. I'm a passenger, as you can see now.
Oh my days. So the steering wheel is just moving itself.
The car is braking, accelerating, and it's switching from forward to reverse itself.
It's almost like watching a video game on the monitor, but then the steering wheel is turning its own.
And there you go. You see the red box? That means it's going to park now. It's finished. So when it's finished parking, it'll actually select park in the car.
Yeah.
And it'll apply the parking brake. And there you go. There's the car perfectly parked without me touching anything.
And it's perfect distance from other cars and all the
car,
rest.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's the charge point behind there now.
That's very handy.
If I can just, there we go.
Oh God.
As you can see, the acceleration is quite...
I don't do well with speed.
It's another misconception people have about electric vehicles, that they're slow.
Yeah.
But as you can see, there's very, very little. We'll get away from the lights as quick as that.
You nearly got an F-bomb out of me there now. Genie Mac. Yeah, no, I can verify the speed of the Nissan Leaf. So the bottom line, like, let's bust a few myths briefly here now. Firstly, it's only a city car. True or false?
False, definitely. I mean, I've travelled the length and breadth of Ireland in the car.
You don't get the full bells and whistles. You have to compromise if you have an electric vehicle.
There's no compromise with an electric vehicle. It's actually, for most people, it's an upgrade, as you can see, sitting into this car.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Now, we've only just said goodbye to January 2019, but many eyes are already looking towards January 2020, as that is when the support for Windows 7 will come to an end. This could cause a headache for some and cost money to others, but what does it mean for you? James Williamson of the Love Tech team at Harvey Norman joined me earlier this week to discuss.
So, before we start talking about a specific operating system or what support means, we need to go back to the very basics, which are updates, which is something that we talk about an awful lot, and it's something that annoys a lot of people. Updates are on your iPhone or your Android device or even your computer. It's a little message down the bottom that says there's updates outstanding for X, Y, and Z. It might be WhatsApp or it might be the phone or tablet or laptop itself. A lot of people ignore them. But what that is the developers who have built the system that you use are making improvements in the background. They've either noticed glitches that you might not have noticed, or there's a new feature that they're bringing out for that system or one of the apps that you use. And you know, you can go to bed at night and see 8 updates on your phone. You do the updates, you wake up the next day and there's another update. And people kind of say to us, how come there's so many updates? I've never had to do so many updates. But what that is, well, for a techie guy like me, is kind of cool. They're the new features that are coming out all the time and improving the device that you bought. So you, like, I think I mentioned this on the show before, you can buy a device and it does X, Y, and Z. Then 3 or 4 months' time, it actually does more stuff because the developers in the background are improving that.
Yeah, so you're actually getting better value from your device by updating and getting the new features, and they can fix problems and they can, you know, just make it better.
Yeah, exactly. So something that I do, which probably shouldn't, I suppose, be admitting on radio, is that when an update does come out, I don't think, oh no, this is such a pain. I actually click in and read, what is this doing?
Same.
And yeah. So like you click in and say, for example, on WhatsApp, it'll say, well, now you can do this in a group chat or whatever. And that's all cool. They're like new things that your device now does. But sometimes what you see is, oh, this fixes an issue where when you click this button, it causes your device to freeze.
Yeah.
And sometimes I read those and go, I haven't noticed that experience. But then sometimes I read and go, oh, finally, that thing is fixed. So updates are a way that there's constant improvements happening in the background. And there's a couple of different types of updates. There's new feature updates, which are changes to the actual app or the system. And then there are system kind of vulnerability updates for security reasons. So like to keep you protected against certain threats and stuff like that.
Which is the bigger reason, like it's the bigger concern, isn't it really? Like that you have the most up-to-date security software, because we saw things like WannaCry a few years ago, which shut down the whole of the NHS. Like we've seen really nasty attacks happen. So the security side is the serious side. The feature updates are the nice bells and whistles that make it either a bit more efficient or a bit fancier for you.
Exactly, yeah. So like, the WannaCry one is a good example, because when I'm talking about people who see updates and think, oh, it's just so annoying, I have to do this again. The WannaCry virus, for example, when that actually struck, that was discovered, I think it was 91 days before the outbreak actually occurred. But the developers, like Microsoft and other systems and stuff like that, noticed that and started working on what's called an update or a patch to fix that before it actually, the outbreak kind of struck. And they made an update available 59 days before what we know as the WannaCry outbreak, which affected so many different businesses and organizations. But because people hadn't done their updates, when it actually broke out, it actually did affect devices. And I think it affected, the last time I read about it, it was just under 500,000 devices across 150 countries.
Yeah.
And the net financial loss of those companies was $4 billion, which if you're a developer who's made the update as a precautionary thing before, you're probably reading that going, oh no, like I sorted all this,
I could have fixed it. Yeah.
But unfortunately the end users hadn't carried out the updates, and that's kind of one of the that just highlights the importance of updates. So to go back I suppose, your question about what does end of support mean, it's all about updates. You just get different types of updates. So Windows 10 came out 2010 and is supported in what's called mainstream support for 5 years, which means you get all...
So Windows 7 came out in 2010.
Windows 7, back in 2010. So what that means is that mainstream support is available for 5 years after release, which means new features, security updates, all of those updates come through. When you see the update button, you're getting potentially new features, new apps might install on your system, and then all the security and stuff like that will come through as well. What happens then after 5 years, it goes into it's kind of extended support, which means you only get the likes of your security updates to keep your device safe from the likes of WannaCry, stuff like that. And that's the phase that we're in now with Windows 7, which is ending in January 2020.
Okay, so come January, there are a few different options, but if you don't do anything, if you just continue to use your device, you are more vulnerable to an attack of some description or a virus of some description taking over your device because Microsoft won't be pumping in those new security patches and the updates.
Yeah.
Okay, so what are the options? You know, do you have to upgrade your system? Can you, like, should you just go and buy a new device? Can all existing systems running Windows 7 host Windows 10? Like, what are the considerations here?
So Microsoft had an official kind of program to get a free version of Windows 10. So if you had Windows 7, you were entitled to, for a short period of time, an upgrade to Windows 8, which then became Windows 8.1. But then Microsoft made a program available where you can go straight from Windows 7 to Windows 10 for free. So there's no extra payment there. Officially, that program ended after about 2 years. So that was back in, I think it was 2016 or 17, around that time that ended. However, we're still getting devices that come into us, and the option on people's machine to upgrade to Windows 10 for free is still there.
Oh.
So we're seeing customers come in asking questions about Windows 7, like being proactive. They've read stuff in the news. They know that support's coming to an end. What can I do? Our LoveTech teams are having a look at them, and the option to upgrade is still there. So we're actually carrying out those upgrades on some of those customers' machines for them.
Great.
So they get the latest operating system. And once they're over into Windows 10, they are getting new features and stuff like that, provided their own device supports that.
Mm-hmm.
You have to bear in mind that a customer whose device was originally running Windows 7 when it was purchased is probably, it could be nearly 10 years old now at this stage. So the hardware of the machine might actually be what's holding the device back. But if the device is eligible for a Windows 10 upgrade, I would carry that out as the first port call.
And like, you may notice that the upgrade is like made available to you, but the machine then may struggle to host it because it's going to be more intense. You know, 10 years is a huge leap in terms of the technological advancement. You may also notice that, you know, say your machine can host it, but your battery life may go down massively because it's such a more intense program.
Most operating systems, newer versions, when they come out, they have an awful lot more features. Like, we expect so much from our technology. I think you've probably heard me have a rant about mobile phones and the amount that people expect out of their mobile phones.
Yeah.
So battery life is never going to be like your Nokia
3310. No matter how much we want it to be.
Because it does so much more than what that phone did.
Yeah.
But I am noticing that the system requirements for a lot of operating systems are, they're lowering over the years as systems are being made more efficient. But at the same time, we have customers using devices now that, you know, they landed on the moon with less technology.
Yeah.
That, like, that's the spec of the machines that are out there now. It is a consideration when you are going to upgrade, though. If you have, you know, an entry level machine from 2012, to put Windows 10 on that now, that is probably going to make that machine run. It will probably run Windows 10, but it's not going to be the best Windows 10 experience for you. You might, as you said, struggle with battery life, or you might not have enough RAM on that machine to open up Excel and do online shopping at the same time. And it might cause the machine just to be a little bit slow, but will still work. But in terms of support, if you're using Windows 10, you're getting, you know, I suppose, the latest updates and stuff like that as well.
Okay, so you said that the first port of call is see if you are eligible for the free upgrade.
Yeah.
Give it a go. If not, can you revert back to Windows 7 if the Windows 10 doesn't suit the operating, or doesn't suit the device?
It will. I couldn't give an answer for every device, yeah, but on a lot of machines, when we talk about factory settings that are like built into the machine, a lot of the times the upgrade will keep your Windows 7
okay
factory settings there.
Okay, but so there's no guarantee on your particular device.
It
okay
actually depends on how you carry out the upgrade.
Okay, okay. So maybe that is an instance to go to the LoveTech guys and just get them to sort of talk you through it. So that's one. Some people may decide, well, look, I haven't bought a new device in 6, 7, 10 years.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the plunge. Just give us a very brief overview of the factors that you should consider when buying a new device. Because sometimes people will be be led by budget,
yeah,
which I know cannot always be the best thing, because you can spend £600 on a computer,
yeah,
but you don't use half the features, or you don't need half the features, or it's just completely unsuitable. It's not powerful enough for what you want to do.
Yeah. So something that we tried to do, we had somebody come into our store and as an outsider and have a look at how we talk about the specs of machines.
Mm-hmm.
I'm buying a car at the minute. I'm not the most savvy person when it comes to cars or car mechanics. So I need somebody to sit down and say to me, well, here's the things that you're looking out for.
Yeah.
In the technology industry, you can, because we're interested in this kind of stuff as well, we're talking a certain language that might not be the same language that everybody who's buying a laptop is.
Which is totally fair enough, yeah.
So we got somebody to come in as a complete outsider, not the most technical person, and said, look, try and buy from us,
mm-hmm,
and give us the feedback. And when we looked at some of our tickets, we had so many different specs across like different types of devices. So if you were trying to do a side-by-side comparison, that would have been very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So we rolled out what we called a renaissance strategy. We completely rechanged our thinking as to how we talk about devices. So for a laptop, for example, we've got the same 4 or 5 spec
on every single one that you walk through. So you know, and like what I like, and again, you know, when you walk in, it can be so overwhelming, particularly when you're trying to spend something that's a few hundred quid, which is a big investment.
Yeah.
But like, it is all uniform. So the same stats are on the same one. And you can see, well, this one has, you know, 8 gigs of RAM versus 4 gigs of RAM. So exactly. I know that that obviously matters. So talk us through then. So what are the things that you should be looking out for?
So in a laptop, the first thing, I suppose, the engine, mm-hmm, of the machine is the processor. So that's how fast or like how powerful the device is in carrying out the tasks that you need to carry out. So there's a whole range of processors available from Intel to AMD, and there's always a good, better, best option there. And that's where I would advise that you talk to a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
And because the processor is going to largely dictate, I suppose, the cost of the machine.
Yeah.
But if we have somebody coming in who's looking at a really stylish looking machine, and it's maybe like an i7, a very high end Intel processor based machine, and then they say, I just do online shopping.
You don't need an i7.
You don't need an i7.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to my point about, you know, we landed on the moon with less technology than some consumers have now.
Yeah.
It's because there's been so many advancements. And the next thing then I would look at is RAM. So RAM is the machine's memory.
Yeah.
Not your storage, it's memory. And memory allows you to carry it, kind of dictates the amount of tasks that you can seamlessly carry out.
Okay.
So that's where you're opening 4 or 5 different programs at the one time. You're hopping between your internet browser to Microsoft Office. And every software package will have a certain amount of RAM that it needs to run. So Microsoft Office, for example, you might only use Excel, but when you open something from the Office package, it actually it has the same requirements on RAM as if you opened every program in the package. So that's where we try to ask questions and, well, what are you going to use this for? Because we'll have a rough idea. If somebody says, I just do this to answer my emails, they don't need, you know, 8 gigs of RAM in an i7 processor.
Yeah.
The next thing is storage, and that depends on how you use the device in terms of what you want to keep on it in terms of pictures, movies, personal files.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen massive jumps in the amount of storage space available on devices over the last number of years. And we do have customers coming in asking for a 2 terabyte hard drive in a laptop.
Yeah.
And I've often seen, and that's because somebody said, oh, more is better. And I'll be the first one to say that's not the case, because I've seen customers buy devices from us and then come in with their old device and they want to get the data transferred. And they've bought a laptop that holds 2,000 gigs,
mm-hmm,
worth of data, and they only had 80 gigs on their old one.
Yep.
They only had the family holiday from 5 years ago and a couple of work documents, and that's as much as they had on it. And they're buying a storage capacity far greater than what they actually need.
Yeah.
The last thing then, I suppose, is battery life. And there's always going to be a playoff between performance and battery life, and then how the device actually looks itself, whether it needs to be thin and portable for if you're travelling around to work with it and stuff like that. But they're the main things that I would look out for, and they form part of our conversation as part of the sales process. So they're the things that we talk about when we try to find out what the device is used for.
Yeah, so look at your own usage and what you want to be able to do, and then go in and have a conversation. There are so many devices out there. So if you want a specific recommendation, if you are someone who does video editing or gaming, or you just want the online shopping and email device, get your questions into us. TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address, and James will be back in a few weeks' time. And we can sort of talk through again in greater detail, maybe what device you should consider, or should you look at, you know, the old school desktop computer. TechTalk@newstalk.com. For the moment, James Williamson of Love Tech at Harvey Norman, thank you so much.
Thank you. Cheers.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you'll find it up in full on newstalk.com, in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Patrick Egan is up next here on Newstalk. I'll chat to you next week.